course, will be the first of a series of four as far as my participation. My wife is with me tonight. I'd like to introduce her to you. And she's my little high school sweetheart. We knew each other in junior high school. How many of you knew each other when you were in junior high? Huh? Hey, few blessings on thee, mazel tov. All right. Melba and I, we knew each other, and we were buddies, you know, right on through junior high. And then about 11th grade, we started getting serious. In fact, she broke up with her boyfriend. I broke up with my girlfriend. And we were talking to each other how sad we were. And then we realized how happy we were talking about how sad we were. Got us into it. But Melba, have a stand up there just so you'll know who this little gal is. All right, Melba. Good. And just to give you a little background, not that it's important, but a lot of times you want to know where the guy's coming from. I was in the used car business for 11 years. And that's right, huh? Now you know what happened to old used car dealers. One guy said, old used car dealers never die, they just trade away. But we got... You got that one now, Mark? You got that one? But... I had a tremendous experience in my own life, not tremendous in an emotional sense, but a realistic sense. My life was just turned around just 180 degrees about my 20th year, and it just changed my whole pattern of life, and nobody had to say anything. It just, I had an experience that just brought a joy into my life I'd never known before. Mel and I had been married for a couple of years by this time. And I stayed on in the car business through another 4 or 5 years, working with kids and, you know, just telling them about the good news and the joy of what it means to have your head on straight. And then I just kept feeling more and more impressed to get into full-time work. That is, you know, just go at it. And so I talked it over with my little wife, and we decided to kind of hang up the shingle as far as our three-office complex was concerned, just kind of move out. And for a year, just flake out and serve the Lord. You know, just do whatever we could for whatever. And so we just tried it for a year. And that was 20 years ago. And during that year, I had a contact with Walt Worthington right up here. And I remember I already came alive as far as God was concerned at a camp. So I was kind of turned on about camps anyway, getting away from all the, you know, stained glass and all the mogi-mogi that goes on inside of our churches. And I got outside, and I for the first time, I started listening. I'm sure what they were saying inside the church before was good, but it blocked my head. I just couldn't hear. I was usually playing finger tag in the back row, you know, but anyway, got up here and I could not believe the beauty of this place. I'm from Southern Cal, you know, and you, little San Bernardino Mountains are pretty, but when you get up in the big Sierras, Walt, I said, why don't you have more kids up here? He said, well, why don't you help us? I said, fine, next year we'll be back. Came up with about 350 kids. He says, we need you on the staff. Anyway, we started off, and that's where we've been. The last 20 years have been right here all summer long at Hume Lake working with kids. Last year we had over 25,000. And it's tremendous. We don't understand. Walt's not a professional. He's an old ex-farmer, and I'm an ex-used car dealer, and I don't know what Hiltz is. He's an ex-everything. But just a bunch of people up here that love God. And we're not denominationally oriented at all. You understand that? We love Catholics, Baptists, Presbyterians, anything, you name it. We like them all. Because God is very clear in His Word that there'll be no Baptists in heaven. Or, I got to go on with that, or Presbyterians. Or Catholics, or any, there's no denominations in heaven. You know that? There's none. Only people going to be in heaven are united brethren. No. That's why Mel and I joined the Brethren Church. We want to be heaven. But no kidding, really, the weekend we want to just, I want to share with you some things that I hope will make sense. Some of you have never been to a camp before. Some of you are probably wondering right now, why did I come? I just say, just give it, you know, just hang on. We're going to have a good time. And I know you've already had your heads warmed up and the hearts already, but what we want to be doing, I'm going to preach to you. I don't think I'm that. I'm not even a preacher. I'm not even a reverend. I don't even know what I am. I'm just one kid said, I know what you are, poor. I said, what am I? He said, you're a clod for God. All right, but... There's some things that are exciting in life that we have found, Melvin and I, and one of them is just a little thing called truth. Boy, knowing truth, knowing reality, we feel is really critical. And it's not easy to know. It doesn't come overnight. Knowledge is power. Maybe you've seen that little phrase. And it's a true phrase. The more you know about anything, the more powerful you become in your understanding. And the more powerful of a person you become in your own character. So knowing truth has got to be number one. And of course, when you look out in the world, like just this last week, I don't know how many of you come from the LA area, but we had a movie down there called the Holocaust. Did you see that? How many of you saw this thing? Whoa, you know what I'm talking about. It's a story of World War II and 6 million Jews getting wiped out. And I've been in it before as far as the movie and the stories and documentation. And you read something like that, and when your mind hits something like that, it's so graphic and so, you say, how can human beings, how can anybody think like that, you know? And it just boggles your mind, and it's a challenge to think through. Really find out. To me, something like that is, in a sense, intellectually refreshing because it makes me think. I am so traditionally American. You know, and yet when I see something like that and I realize it comes from a completely different source of thoughts, I go, whoa, those are thoughts I never thought before. And I need to get my head stirred up. And I remember one of the most impressive books that Melvin and I read together was a fellow who lived through the prison camps as a Jew, and he made it all the way through, lived through all that torment, and just lived maybe he said 12 hours from death, and after he got through this grueling ordeal, he became a psychiatrist. In fact, he was a psychiatrist before he went in, but he got his full fledged doctorate and so forth, and today, as far as I know, is still practicing, and his name is Viktor Frankl, and he wrote a book. It's about that thick. And I don't like that thick books. I like little books. But when I started reading the first few chapters of that book, this man is not a Christian. As he wrote about his experiences through the camps in Germany, the thing that was amazing, he wasn't chopping the Germans. He wasn't taking shots at them, which should be a tendency if you had gone through that kind of an experience. But what he was doing was picking out his basic philosophy of life. In other words, he was talking about, hey, what keeps you alive, man? And he's developed a therapy, and he calls it logotherapy. Now, if you know the word logos, logo means the word, or it means meaning. And that's his whole key to a happy life, is to know what you are living for. One missionary hit it this way. He said, if what you're living for isn't worth dying for, it isn't worth living for. Now, that'll kind of rub you the wrong way if you haven't thought about it. But, whoa, you say, is there anything worth dying for? And it makes you think again. But Frankl's approach was really interesting. After he talked about his experiences, he said, when someone comes in, this is how he gets into logotherapy. I'll just give you this little deal. Maybe you'd like to read it sometime. But he comes in and people start talking about all their pain, all of the problems they've got. And he listens to them. Oh, he listens to them. Tell me all your problems. Tell me. And so they get through all the problems. And then he says this. This is called a shock therapy. He says, all right, my friend, he says, I have a solution for you. For all your problems, I have a solution. And of course, this always gains their attention. And they say, yes, doctor, what is it? And he says this. Seriously, he says, solution, suicide. You know? Boy, he says, he lets him blink a couple of three times. He said, no, I'm serious. That would solve all those problems. He said, I'm not funny. I'm serious. And they said, never, that's ridiculous. He said, tell me why it's ridiculous. Then they begin to tell him why it's ridiculous. Those things he writes down on a pad, those are the things that have meaning to the people who are rejecting his concept of suicide. Hey, that's kind of a ridiculous thought, but when you get into life, you have to realize that we really, our whole lifestyle pivots upon what we believe. You know, sometimes you don't think about it that way, but when armed robbery, when a guy goes in with a piece of iron and he's going to hold up a Safeway market, okay, now he goes in there because he believes that he can get away with it. Now, if he didn't believe that he could get away with it, he never would have started in the first place. You see? And you begin to see behavioral patterns all over. And you say, hey, man, he does what he does because that's what he believes. Here's some weird thoughts, like in communistic thought. You wonder why when the communists, you know, they take over a country and they just, you know, boom, all the brains go swoop, they just like that and they're dead. You say, why would communists do that? Hey, it's so repulsive to us until you understand what they believe. They believe that man is just an extension of animal. He has no past, no future. His only value is in the content of the herd. And here's one of the arguments from their writing. Hey, if you had a whole bunch of sick animal or had a whole bunch of, well, cows, and you had a sick cow, what would you do with the sick cow? You say, well, you'd try to cure it. But what if the cow was incurable? Would you put it with the well cows? Scientifically, what would you do with it? Hey, there's only one scientific solution, extermination. And that's the philosophical basis of it. Now, I say that just to get you to think. I'm not going to be talking about communism this week, by the way. I'm just throwing that in because, boy, thoughts are things. Thoughts are things. And tonight I want to just drop one on you because I know that probably all of you here believe in God in some form. It's interesting about that because when you start talking about it, if there is a God, I use the word if that we could talk objectively, hey, then there must be some rhyme or reason. If there is a God, question mark, you know. Yeah. And when you get into this in your own life, hey, if there's a God. You know, when I talk to people who don't believe in God, I used to think they were hardcore atheists. I thought they just couldn't, we'll argue, we'll be logical, But hey, I found out that the problem is not the number one problem. You know, the number one problem is not whether or not there's a God. The number two problem is their big one. If there's a God, am I responsible? Ooh, and they don't like number two, so they don't look at number one. But the whole idea of getting into this thing is, hey, if there is a God, man, I'll tell you, I believe. This is where meaning is. Logotherapy, hey, there, to me, this is personal now. Nothing more important on this planet than to really understand what the plan is all about. Hey, if there is a God in heaven. Now, I want to just give you five little quickies, reasons why I believe in God. Now, I don't think these are all conclusive, and I don't even know that if I'm going to persuade anybody here. But maybe you've never thought these thoughts before. You know? I've talked to a lot of people, and I say, you believe in God? And one guy said, yeah, you're damn right. I said, well, that's good. I said, which God do you believe in? He said, what do you mean, which God do I believe in? I said, I just asked you a question. You believe in God? You said you did. I'm asking you a second question. What God do you believe in? He said, there's only one God. I said, well, what is he? Is it he or is she or an it? He never thought those thoughts. You know, you just kind of grow up in America and pledge allegiance to one nation under God, and we say the word God, 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 three-letter word. Hey, that word is well-worn, isn't it? It's be amazing. If you get your antenna out and start listening for the word God throughout the day, man, you think you're in a revival service, you know? Of course, the tragedy is it's kind of a slang term, and very few people even think about it. But the point tonight is that, hey, I believe in God. I believe that God has a plan for your life and mine. I believe the plan is something you can know about personally. I think the plan includes husbands and wives. I believe that God is the one who designed, this is just, I'm just giving you a little shot here about what I believe and what I've discovered. I believe this God that we're talking about tonight is so intelligent that he's communicated. You know, one of the basic mark of intelligence is the ability to communicate. And hey, he's a communicator. And he's revealed to us this whole man-woman plan and talked about how husbands ought to be, what wives ought to be. Gives a little order and you say, poor, you mean it's all in the book? Yeah, God's revealed it. And I just want to share with you just five reasons tonight. Not in order to persuade you, but just kind of to reinforce maybe some thoughts you've already had. One of the reasons that I believe in that, number one, is because of all the study I've had, every place I've looked, every book I've read, everything I've ever got a hold of, every place I've ever been on planet Earth, universally now, there's a belief in God. There is a universal belief in God. Even back in history, even back with the archaeologists going down into the stratus and finding primitive cultures, no matter how far back we go, there's some religious structure. There's some kind of a form of God. It comes in various forms. I'd agree with that. But man has been, as Karl Marx said, incurably religious. Now, the question is, why? Why does man have this religious nature? You say, well, he's afraid to die. Well, that might be a part of it. But, that doesn't solve the big problem. If there's a universal effect, there must be a universal cause. So, as you begin to look around, you say, well, we're moving out of those dark ages. We're in the scientific age. Oh, listen to me, my friend. You still can't escape God. They can't even write a science fiction story without including the force be with you. Hey, there's no rhyme or reason without some type of a central intelligence, some type of a central source of power. And so, one is far out, but it's just the idea of the universal belief in God, too. The fact that it's reasonable. Now, I know this is going to make some of you sick, but just hang on to me. I'm not a theologian and I'm not a philosopher, but I'm just an old ex-used car dealer. So when I take a look at things, they've got to be real. And so when I look at things, I don't understand some arguments that guys give me and say, you're wrong, and they tell me why I'm wrong. I don't even understand what they're talking about. But when I start looking at things, I say, when I look, for example, at a car, it's just a car. Now I say to myself, either somebody made that car or somebody didn't make that car. Is that fair enough? I mean, that's a simple mind. I just look at the car and I say, that's either made by somebody or it wasn't made by somebody. Now, I want to be scientific about this. I want to be even, a little PD here. I'm going to use a little detective work here. So I say, as I look at the car, I say, now, what makes me think anybody made the car? Did I see anybody make it? No. Did I talk to anybody who made it? No. Did I talk to anybody who talked to anybody who made it? No. I believe somebody made a car. Now, why do I believe somebody made a car if I didn't talk to anybody who made a car? I begin to think. I say, how do I know that? I don't know it. The only way I know it is through a little thing called reasonable. It's reasonable. I see a geometrical design. I see obvious intelligent purposes. So I hear the motor run. And I just put it all together. It doesn't take me long before I come to a simple conclusion. Somebody put this baby together. Now, supposing, just for sake of argument, supposing a guy walks up to me and says, poor, I don't think anybody made the car. And I say, man, that's great. I like your freedom. Now tell me, why don't you believe somebody made the car? Where did the car? If you don't believe that somebody made the car, you got a problem. You know what the problem is? Where did the car come from? You see the point? And so the idea, you look at the universe. You say, wow, fantastic. Universe, where'd it come from? You look out. Well, let's don't get the universe. That's the tree outside. You see those beautiful ponderosas out there? You say, the guy says, look at that ponderosa. Where'd it come from? I said, it came from that pine cone. And then the guy said, where'd the pine cone come from? Well, I said, it came in a pine tree. and you go back, pine tree, pine tree, pine tree, pine tree, pine tree. Now, you get back and you come to the final, the final end of the chain, and you say, well, now, wait a minute. Who made the first pine cone or the first pine tree, whatever it was? And you just say, nobody. If you don't have a God to start with, all you got is a dirt clod. Where'd it come from? Dirt clod. And my mind is very simple. I just say, I don't believe that. I don't believe that pine cone came out of a dirt clod. All of the visible intelligence that's woven into the fabric of the physical universe, and just to say it happened by chance, it's just incomprehensible. And yet some people believe that, I guess. They choose to. It's certainly not reasonable. I think it takes less faith to believe in a creator than it takes to believe in no creator. Like the car. I had a kid come to me one time after a meeting and he told me point blank. He said, Mr. Poor, I stuck around after the meeting just to tell you face to face, I don't believe in God. I said, fine. I said, can I tell you what I don't believe in? He said, what? I said, did you just tell me you don't believe in God? He said, yeah. I said, I want to tell you what I don't believe in. He said, all right, what don't you believe in? So I turned around, I pointed at my car. I was on the parking lot there, little SE Charger 383, sitting there, and he kind of looked it. I said, I don't believe anybody made that car. I don't believe in a car maker. He said, what do you mean? I said, I don't believe anybody made that car. I said, do you know where that came from? He said, no, where? I said, my understanding is a long time ago, it just grew out of the asphalt. He looked at me, he says, you're weird. And I said, man, when you start telling me that everything just came out of nothing, I said, that's the same kind of logic. Now, the point, I'm not... the universal argument is fantastic. the idea of where did everything come from? You know, cause and effect. That's another. Third one, the way it's designed. You see, it's not just the fact that there's it's intelligently designed. And when you begin to talk about design and order, you're talking about intelligence. We have some kids sometime they come to camp and they'll say, my professor said such and such. You know, trying to blow apart the arguments of God. And they'll say, my professor said such and such. Hey, I found one the other day, it's classic. I say, why do you go to your professors? I mean, little ding-a-ling, they're not much. You know, a little doctor here. I said, let's go to the top of the pile. If you want to talk about the intelligentsia, let's go to the top of the pile. So I found this school. Dr. Arthur Compton. Now, Dr. Arthur Compton happens to be a Nobel Prize winner in the field of physics. Now, you understand the Nobel Prize. My wife gave me a Nobel Prize, but I won it back. Nobel Prize. Hey, and here's what Dr. Arthur Compton says about his personal faith in God. Listen, hey, you know, frontal lobes. I mean, he's got brains. This is intellectual. Just hang on. Here's a quote. He says, for myself, faith begins with the realization that a supreme intelligence brought the universe into being and created man. He said, it is not difficult for me as a scientist to have this faith. Why? For it is incontrovertible. Oh, I love that word. It's a big one. Incontrovertible. You know what it means? Incontrovertible? Let me try it for you that kind of like I am. You know what a convertible is, don't you? Now, a convertible that will not convert is incontrovertible. I mean, you can't change it. And he is challenging. Now, listen to this. He is challenging the intelligentsia of the world. This is Dr. Arthur Compton. He's saying, all right, minds think. It is not difficult for me as a scientist to have this faith, for it is incontrovertible that where there is a plan, there is intelligence. An orderly, unfolding universe testifies to the most majestic truth ever stated in the beginning. God created, unquote, Dr. I don't need that, but I love it. But you get into it, and you begin to find out, hey, there is a reason for our faith. Hey, you know, that makes it kind of exciting. We have a source of information. You know, the big question, where did I come from? What am I doing? Where am I going? Hey, boy, when you put this together, you begin to realize that God has revealed himself in so many different ways. In the cause and effect, and then what they call the teleological, the idea of the plan, then the moral argument. The idea that everybody has a moral consciousness of right or wrong. That's an interesting study. You get into anthropology, some of you have been in that. And you know, the lowest level of society on the planet, no matter where you go into the deepest jungles of wherever, wherever you find human beings, they have a right or wrong system. Maybe primitive, but it's right or wrong. You don't swipe things, you get your hand cut off. You know, and they have little systems of right or wrong. This moral awareness, where does it come from? Hey, you take all the apes, all the orangutans, all the chimpanzees, put them all together, and I don't care how many things they can teach them to do, not a one of them has a conscience. Not a one. Now, the question is, where does conscience come from? Lower animals? Hustle, grasshopper, you have a problem with that. And you begin to realize the moral motions that's in every human heart. Something that has been given to him. Have you ever noticed your conscience? Even before you become a Christian, your conscience is there. And sometimes it's even independent of your own thought. Sometimes you shoot an order, shut up in there. You know, wherever it is, it just doesn't shut up. What is this thing? Hey, God gave it to us. The part of the God-likeness. Ooh, that's neat. One last one. And this is the heavy one for me. I heard the stories all my life. You probably have too. But I was never personally satisfied until I had a personal confrontation with God. Now this gets a little, you know, I mean, some of you say, you know. It wasn't that way at all. I went to church, heard the stories, baptized, frontward, backward, sprinkled, sand fried, you know, went through all the confirmation. Had every conceivable thing done to me that they could do, and they did it, you know. And I wasn't objecting. I was kind of going along because they told me to do it. And yeah. And I'm boom. And I thought that was it. But I'll tell you, it's not it. 20 years of age, I was asked by a pastor to take some kids to a camp. Had no intention to go. I just flat said, no, thank you. I'm sorry. Weekend with kids at a camp. You know, whoa. And so I just hung up. He called my dad. My dad talked me into taking the kids up there. Let me use his new Cadillac. I was kind of blown out of my little shot there. And I grabbed these kids, got up there with no intention of staying. Mind made up to go drop them off at the camp. up in San Bernardino Mountains, and I was going to shoot down to San Bernardino, have a little hoo-hoo, and come right back up. Nobody know the difference. Had the plans all made. Got into that camp. Got it's snow camp, snow all over the place. I was pretty. I hadn't been around snow for, you know, as a kid. I looked at that and wow. And I got there, and the pastor comes, and he gives me a little book like this. He says, Ken, he says, we're short. Just one boy's counselor. Just like that. And I took it. I knew I'd been had, so I turned it around, and I smiled at him. I said, I hope you find him. And that was my intention. I had no intention of staying there. And I started getting in that car, and these little guys that I brought up there all asked me to be their counselor. Every one of them. Mr. Boy, won't you? And I said, you know, and I looked at these kids, and I thought, hey, kids. I said, if you want me to stay, hey. And before I thought about it, I said yes. Now, that's how I got to that camp. I wasn't very sympathetic. Maybe some of you had a weird, you know, opportunity to get them. Maybe you're here, you know, but that's the way I was there. And I had no intention of staying, but here these kids talked me into staying. Here I was at this camp and never been to one in my life. Got it that night, had a room about this size and jammed full of junior hires. I don't know if you've ever seen, you know, 300 or 400 junior hires together in one place. Oh, brother. And I sit in the back seat, back row, you know, ready for a quick getaway, and they start singing. Long story short, I thought, wow, I've never heard anybody sing like that. They were just rattling the walls. And then they introduced the speaker for the weekend. And I'll never forget this. Guy got up and said, this is Reverend Jimmy Johnson from Deep South. I don't remember, Georgia or someplace down there. And he got up there and he had a black turtleneck sweater on. And he had a kind of a chrome chain around his neck with a big cross on it. You know, one of those big hangers. And he had some boots on. And I'd never seen a preacher like this. You know, I've been to church where everything is very formal. Then the guy gets up there and he starts talking. He sounds like a human being. You know, and I say that in love, but you know, a lot of guys, a lot of ministers, I don't know, chopping there, but the ones we had, every time you talk to them outside, they're normal. But when they start to preach, but this guy got up and he started talking, and it sounded so neat because he was from Georgia, first of all, or someplace down there, and that big southern drawl just, well, gee, boo, boo, wow, boo, boo, day, boo, wow, man. And you couldn't hardly help but listen to the guy because it was fun. And I remember as he was talking along there, one of the thoughts I thought about this guy, Johnson, was he was talking, I thought, man, if that guy was selling cars, he could be making a foul. Anyway, he got to the end of his little message. He'd been talking about being born again, you know, something you probably have heard, so have I. You must be born again. Must be born again. He kept talking to these kids. Must be you boys and girls. And he was getting really in there. And then he says, right at the end, he says, all right, he says, have all you boys and girls bow your heads. You know, I've been in those meetings where they start bowing heads. So when they start bowing heads, I bowed out. I got outside and I thought, whoa, what did I experience there? Man, I didn't know what it was. You know, because I figured I was inside the family. I'd gone through all these little programs. And I walked outside, and I don't remember too much about what he said, except, you know, you got to be saved, you know my Jesus, few words stuck in my head. But as I walked out the door, I thought to myself, man, what is that guy saying? And I thought this. I thought, either that guy is a religious nut, or else he's got a contact with God. I don't know anything about it. That's all I said. And I just piddled around there for about an hour. Kids got out, had free time. Pretty soon they ding-dong some kind of a bell. You hear bells around here. Bing-bong bell. And I'm over to my assigned room. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever been a counselor before, but I had never been a counselor in my life. They give me this little book here. Make it short here. I walk inside, and I've got 8 junior high boys. And these kids are already there, ahead of me. And they're half of them are in their pajamas, half of them are not. They got the pillows out, and they're doing a pillow fight. I mean, it's a big number. I mean, one has already gone, you know, and it's just... And I walk in the room, and I see all this melee going. I just barked out. I didn't know what to do, you know. I said, get your back. These little kids, they ran, jumped in their butt, you know. I didn't know how to do it, so I was just doing the only thing I knew how to do, you know. And I said, all right, you guys, I said, I want you to sleep. You understand me? Eyeball contact. I said, sleep. I said, if I hear any more noise coming out of this room, I said, I'm going to be in here. I'm going to bounce you off the wall. You understand, guys? And I was scared myself, but I didn't know what to do, so I fake it out on these kids. So I just start to turn the light out, and it's so cute if you understand the pressure. I'm polite. Little kid at the top bunk. Just a cute little kid. And he was nervous from the big bark, you know. And so as I'm chugging on this thing, this little kid, little timid voice, little cute, little maybe speeches, just a little, and he goes, he said, Mr. Poor, just, you know, over his bunk, he said, Mr. Poor. And I said, yeah. He said, aren't we going to have a devotion? I said, a what? He said, a devotion. He said, don't you know what a devotion is? And then my brain was going 90 miles an hour, but devotion. I understood what he said. But I didn't know what it was, you know, so I finally gave up and I said, hey, buddy, you tell me what it is, we'll have it. And then this kid, the camper, informs me, counselor, supposedly, he said, that's when we read out of the Bible before we go to sleep. Oh, I said, yeah, I knew that. I wondered if you did. Now, I don't know if any of you are like I am, but whenever I got in an argument, somebody started talking about God, I thought I knew all about God. I read the Bible. Have you ever said this? Well, I know what it says. I know. I've heard that before.
That was always my bag.
Oh, yeah, I've been.
But these kids said, give me the book. So here I am for the first time in my life,
looking in this book called the Bible. I've got one in the front drawer, back drawer, up drawer. You know, you graduate Bibles all over the place.
But I never had looked inside. But I did not know that I did not know anything about that book until that night.
And I said, all right, we'll have a devotion. And I started taking it, looking through this page. And the more I looked at this thing, the more I realized I did not know anything about anything. I knew some verses. I didn't know where they were. I'm just looking at this baby. And I'm getting a little nervous about this time. I mean, I really feel it. There's 8 kids, 16 eyeballs glued on me, waiting. You know, I'm looking like this. And as I look, the more I realize I'm in trouble. And don't laugh. Look at this thing. There's no pictures in it. Nothing. You know, So finally, I said to these kids, I said, why don't you guys just ask me some questions about the Bible? I'll give you the answer. I'll tell you, those junior hires, I mean, they just flattened me out. I mean, flat. I could not answer one of their questions. And, you know, God was using that all the time because I was kind of religious. I thought I knew something. But not until you get into this kind of a confrontation. That's why I love camp. Oh, love camp. That's where the old rubber hits the pavement. I said, you boys go to sleep. I'll get the answers, and I'll see you in the morning. I'm right next door, so you better remind you of my former warning. And so I just slept out, turned the light off, slept out. I go into my assigned room. Now, I promise, I had no knowledge as to... I didn't even know I was going to stay with anybody. But I walked into my assigned room and just guess. Guess who my room partner is. Can you guess? That's it, Johnson. There he is. And the guy had a big Bible all open, and I thought, oh, brother, I'm going to ask him every question I can think of. A few of my own, a few of theirs. I'm going to mash this cat flat, you know. And so I started firing questions, and he had a Thompson chain Bible. Do you any of you know what I mean? They're about a third wider than a normal Bible. Great big, you know, humongous Bible, just big junk. And every time I'd ask him a question, it seemed like he'd just kind of wave it, big thing flop back. He'd go, whoa, like this. And he'd open it up, and he'd say, read this, Brother Ken. I'd read it. Well, yeah, pretty good, yeah. And it seemed like every time I had a question, he'd kind of whip that baby and read it to you. I didn't know it. So anyway, I finally ran out of questions, and then I leave you with this tonight because I want you to think about it personally. I'd gone to church off and on all my life, okay? Gone through all these little things I told you about. But he asked me a question tonight I'd never heard in my life. He looked me right in the eyeball. I love guys who can look in the eyeball. That's why I love cops. They always have a way of eyeballing you, you know? And this guy had this boldness, the same kind, only he had it for a different reason. He was concerned about me, and of course, by the questions I was asking, now I realized he knew I knew zero. So he asked me the question. He says, Kenny, so you got any more questions? I said, no. He said, you mind if I ask you a little question? Just a little southern drawl. I said, no. What's your question? Here's what he said. He says, Kenny, now think carefully. He says, do you know my Jesus? Now, he did. If he'd have said, do you believe in him? Oh, I'd have passed that, baby, just like that. But he says, do you know my Jesus? And my brain goes into a spasm. And I'm trying to figure out what he means. I said, Johnson, I said, hey, I know my mom. I know my dad. I know my brother. I know my wife. I know my friend. He comes back with this one. He says, Kenny, he says, you can know Jesus more intimately than all your friends and family put together. Now, by this time, I mean, honest, I thought the guy had just fallen off a turnip truck. You know, whoa. And so I'm backing off, and he sees this kind of a mental rejection. So he says, Kenny, I can prove it to you. I said, you can prove what? He said, I can prove to you that Jesus is more intimately, you can know him more intimately than all your family and friends put together. I said, you could prove it? I said, do it. He says, where's your family? I said, they're in Long Beach, Compton, all around there. He says, where are your friends? I said, they're all over Southern California. He said, in other words, they're not right here in this little cabin room? I had no idea what he's talking about. I said, no, they're not right here in this little cabin room. And he looked at me, eyeball. You know, he says, Kenny, he says, Jesus is here right now. Now, the way he said that, the guy was straight.
I had weird feelings. I was afraid to turn around. I thought maybe he'd stand in the corner. But this guy was something else. I'd never met a guy like that, you know? So sincere. And I said, Johnson, what are you talking about? He said, now, you'll never know him physically. He said, I admit that. But he said, I don't understand. But he said, you can know him in your heart. All you have to do is ask him in. You believe in him, don't you? I said, yeah. He said, but have you ever asked him to God? No. He said, why don't you do that? Then you'll know what I'm talking about. And then he said this. He said, good night. The guy went to bed. I go, whoa. You know. Hey, Lord, at night I couldn't do anything. I finally lay down. I couldn't sleep. I was trying to count the knots in the, you know, I was going through that bit. Hour and a half, I don't know, 2 hours. Finally, I had to find out. I said, if it's true, it's the greatest thing on earth. If it's not, it's a bunch of religious buggers. And so here's my prayer. I thought for 10 minutes, saying, how do I pray? Well, yeah. I'd pray a few times before, you know. You know, when you get in trouble, you always pray a little bit. But I wasn't in any trouble. I was just trying to find out. So I prayed something. It's very similar. I said, God, I said, if you're really who you say you are. I didn't know how to pray. I said, Jesus, I just want you to come into my life. And I don't think I closed my eyes. I just went, and I don't know. No big deal, no big flash, but wow, something happened. I couldn't tell you what it was, but just kind of a relief, kind of a, you know. And I thought, well, whatever that is, it's nice. You know, I laid down, went to sleep, just like that. Woke up the next morning, I still had this kind of a, Now, the Bible calls it a peace that passes under. I didn't know that. I just kind of, you know. And I went through that the day, went through that week in camp. I didn't tell anybody about what happened to me. Came home, walked in my front door, and my wife takes one look at my face. She said, what happened to you? You know, and I'm looking for crud on my pants or something. You know, whoa. I said, what are you talking about, honey? She says, you look different. Oh, I'm picking up the vibes. I said, hey, honey, I got saved. Now, my wife knows you. You know, your wife knows you. She says, you got what? And I said, I don't understand, honey, but I just asked the Lord to take over. And man, oh, man, he's doing something, whatever it is. And she kind of looked at me kind of weird and just disappeared in the little hallway. Hey, we just kind of, you know, the next 3 months were strange. You know, going to church all the time. Pretty soon, little Mel would come and say, honey, what happened to you again? And I said, oh, she's falling under conviction. Oh, praise the Lord. But after I explained it to her about a half a dozen, I realized that she wasn't asking for her own. I was going out talking to my friends, telling them a few of the things that happened to me, and they were going home telling their wives, and their wives were calling her, saying, Mel, what happened to your weird husband? And she was trying to explain that. But anyway, as a result, about 3 months later, Melba got her plug in the right socket and just said, hey, Lord, do it. And he did it. And we've been going ever since. So when we talk about joy this weekend, it's joy in relationship to really knowing God. Not academically, not even theologically, but knowing me personally. Just remember this little phrase, don't ever forget it. Christianity is not a religion. It's a relationship. Hey, that's what it's all about. Okay. Father, again, we thank you for the time together tonight. And Lord, it's been a long day for many of us, and we just pray that our bodies, even as we have some fellowship and some goodies, Lord, just continue to pry into our hearts and minds in a loving way, helping us to really examine our own hearts, to really understand where the meanings, where the values, what they're based on, Lord, in our own thinking. Give us some good vibes this week, and Lord, that we might really understand who we are in a deeper way and really understand the plan that you've laid out for us. So, Father, just take this thought tonight, along with the music we've heard, and just cause us to really think personally about your wonderful invitation to come and to receive the wonderful gift of forgiveness just by a simple act of faith. Put that together for us, Lord, and we'll thank you for it.